From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much. It's Tuesday. Glad you're here. We're going to be joined by Governor Mike Huckabee, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West this hour. We're also looking at this story. We have CEO of Facebook, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, with the Zuckerbucks really affected the election in 2020. And now we find out suppressing the laptop. He told Joe Rogan a while ago, you know, I was really pressured to suppress that laptop. They told me something like this was coming. When it finally arrived, they told me an October surprise would arrive. They said, okay, here it is. And they suppressed the New York Post story. Got it. Now they said that they gave in to pressure from the White House and from the administration and from other agencies like the CDC and suppressed information or denied information regarding the pandemic. And there was regrets from it. I mean, look what Mark Zuckerberg had said. I'll give you a quote. What we saw in the New York Post story reporting on the corruption allegation and then non-Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden, we sent the story to fact checkers to review and temporarily demoted it. We shouldn't have done that. And then they came out and also said, did the same thing when it came to, told the House Judiciary Committee, same thing happened when he came to COVID, and he regrets it. What else is going on out there we don't know? So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
And I don't think any American today would look at what we're seeing today and say, well, I wish we had thousands of troops back in Afghanistan. We've been able to keep take terrorists out, hold them to account without having a large ground force there.
That's absolutely criminal. Admiral Kirby knows better. It has become a terror university. Everyone coming from everywhere to go there, and they want to come here. And we heard my conversation with Scott Mann yesterday. They believe they are here. We're talking about terrorists. Abbeygate debacle. A nation mourns. Dems duck. 3 years later, still no one pays the price. The Biden administration never held accountable, and Trump steps up.
Number two.
We agreed to the same rules. I don't know. Doesn't matter to me. I'd rather have it probably on. But the agreement was that it would be the same as it was last time. In that case, it was muted. I didn't like it the last time, but it worked out fine.
Yeah, they ousted Joe Biden because he couldn't even fill up 90 seconds. The debate over the debate, the rules, the location, the audience, the microphones, all being negotiated. Have both sides accused, posture, and push and pull as early voting is now just weeks away.
Number one.
The choice in this election is very clear, and I'm confident that if elected as president again, Donald Trump, he has the strength and the backbone to stand up to the military-industrial complex and keep us out of these unnecessary wars of choice.
Tulsi Gabbard weighing in. The campaign is on for the next 70 days. The momentum must be earned, and Trump is beginning to earn it, thanks to Governor Kemp going to his side, RFK Jr. going to his side, and now Tulsi Gabbard, all endorsing and supporting as pressure builds for the VP to do any one-on-one, as promised, before the end of the month. 37 days after declaring herself the nominee, she still has not even had the confidence to sit down and do one. And nobody around her seems to be pushing her to do it. I mean, this should be an opportunity to define yourself, to lock in the nomination, show everybody you earned it. How are you different than Biden? What exactly did he do for you? What is Bidenomics? What about your stand on fracking? Anything. If you know what you're doing, you should welcome this opportunity. But now she's just not doing it. So if you want to hear Trump say they should be doing this, she should be doing interviews, that's any minute. You could pull out a million sound bites. What about J.D. Vance? Absolutely. What about Charlemagne the God, one of her biggest supporters, there for her in 2019, known her for the longest period of time, upset that she wasn't making more of an impact as a VP? When asked, this is what he said about her doing an interview. And those people who say, she doesn't have to, cut four.
This isn't about black men and black women. It's about elected officials and potential voters. The whole point of campaign season is for candidates to go out there and explain to the American people why they should be the one in charge of this country. Votes are earned, not given. And they are earned through you going out there and explaining yourself. Vice President Kamala Harris has to go out there and explain her agenda and why she's the person for the job. Former President Donald Trump has to go out there and explain his agenda and why he should be the person to get his job again, you know, or get the job again. I don't understand Plies or any black person, for that matter, telling black people to just settle. Just accept whatever the candidate is giving you. Don't ask any questions. Yeah.
Right. And why have double? He's so right. So he's never going to vote for Trump in a million years. He's going to vote for her. But he's saying go out and earn it. He said that 2 weeks ago to Jonathan Carl at ABC. Should you do an interview? He goes, of course he does. You do two a day. If you are ready for the job, show it. Cut five.
By the way, they should be explaining without us asking. Mm-hmm. That's the whole point of them doing these press conferences and these meetings.
Yeah.
The same way these politicians have meetings for their donors and they have rallies right. and press conferences explaining themselves and their agendas to certain groups, they should have to explain themselves to black people the same way.
Yeah, I don't even think it's a black or white thing at all. I just think Democrats should say, yeah, got to go out and do an interview. I mean, Joe Biden was terrible at it, terrible at press conferences. His answers were ridiculous. He never was called an account, especially with this whole Afghanistan thing. Did any general tell you that government could collapse if we pulled out? He said, nobody. Meanwhile, you have three, Austin, Milley, and McKenzie, all said, yeah, we told them. Nice. He got away with that. That's what she's afraid of. And look at her statements on Abby Gayton. I'll get to that in a moment. But you got 70-plus days till Election Day. Trump plans to make it about the economy. That's going to be the focus. And why is that? Because if you look at every poll, the latest poll, I'll give you the latest one, as in today. What is the most important issue when you vote for president? In February of 2024, 37% said the economy. Now, 38. Immigration drops 7 points. It's now 14 as number two. It was 21. That'll change as soon as we get another surge at the border. The abortion, it's gone up now, 14 to 10. Now, keep in mind, they're trying to get Donald Trump in a daily abortion debate to try to alienate him from his pro-life base. Healthcare, about 7. Election integrity, 7. Climate change, forget it. Foreign policy, sadly, it's at number, as at 4%. Crime at 3%. Guns at 3%. So it's going to be primarily fought on the economy. What is their vision? Now, for Trump, he's for tariffs across the board. Would bring manufacturing back here, bring jobs back here, help the economy overall. If prices go up quickly, well, he wants control of the Fed. He wants control of those interest rates. And he says now that inflation comes down, so should interest rates come down. He's going to try to do that. He needs congressional approval to do it, but he'll do that. But most of all, and what I was listening to the Daily New York Times podcast. It's one of the top most popular podcasts in the country. And they were debating Kamala Harris and Donald Trump's economic policies. And the one thing they said, well, Donald Trump said he's going to increase energy and that'll be the foundation of it. But I don't see how he's going to do that. What do you mean you don't see how he's going to do that? You ask anybody in Alaska if we're using capacity on those pipelines, they'll tell you not close. You ask people if they're able to drill and get permits to get permits and leases like they should. Easily, and they'll say absolutely not. Even though the production's high, it's because it's so plentiful and the innovation's so great. But you get that pause off LNG that's on right now. You start doing that, then gas prices come down. Then all of a sudden, trucks are paying less for their transportation costs, which means they can take the money off the product that they're selling to the supermarkets, and things will ripple downwards. It's not a cure-all, but it's a cure a lot. How about that? So Trump campaign's rolling out some ads, trying to capitalize on what they think is a weakness for Bidenomics. And you know that she's all for Bidenomics. She talked over and over again about it. She's proud of it. And there's some ads coming out about it. Here's Trump taking some of her words, praising Bidenomics, and how she also realizes that prices are too high right now. Cut to.
Everyday prices are too high. Food, rent, gas, back-to-school clothes.
That is called Bidenomics.
A loaf of bread cost 50% more today. Ground beef is up almost 50%. There's not much left at the end of the month.
Bidenomics is working.
The price of housing has gone up. It feels so hard to just be able to get ahead.
And we are very proud of Bidenomics.
There you go. So she was saying that in 2023, and she now tries to commiserate with the higher prices, 20% higher when she took office. Now, you might say, well, those are circumstances. Well, circumstances are hurricanes, natural disasters, earthquakes. These aren't circumstances. You would say, well, she inherited the back end of the pandemic. Fine, she got the vaccine, and then she passed a rescue package that we didn't need. We just passed $100 billion from Congress. You know, whatever Trump asked for, Congress gave him more. They're like, okay, I'll put it into the system. And he put it in. He did a rescue package anyway, the Inflation Reduction Act and the infrastructure plan. It was way too much spending, flooded the market, devalued the dollar. Inflation has gone up. Obviously, it played a role. So that's what he wants to fight on. But when it comes to the debate, I'm really interested in this. The debate is, I think that Trump, if he's going to accept September 10th, I love the fact, and I said it, I speculated early, to my great credit, that if the CNN debate wanted to kill the mics in between questions, and they did, and it worked out great, because Biden could not talk and finish a statement. What have you done for the black community? He used 45 seconds. He had 95. He had another 50 seconds left. So you let her finish. You let him finish. You let him collect himself. You let her collect herself. And then let her talk in circles about Venn diagrams and school buses in space. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. When we come back, Governor Huckabee joins us in Laterno County, Allen West. We'll end this hour with your calls. Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back, and with us in studio, getting set for Outnumbered, Governor Mike Huckabee, Trump surrogate, of course, former Arkansas governor, and you know he's got his own great show, and great to see you, Governor.
Brian, always great to be with you. Thank you for having me.
So, this debate, how much does it matter? Trump's holding to the fact he wants the mics killed.
Yeah.
In the debate, in the beginning, I thought right away, instinctively, I thought this is great news with the Biden. It ended up being fantastic because Biden couldn't finish the 90 seconds.
Yeah.
And Trump had to sit back and let him. And if you think about it, how many times did Biden get saved by a heckler or by a comment?
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden, the Kamala Harris camp says, no, we want the mics open. Where does the rubber hit the road for you?
I think it's no matter what the rules are, Donald Trump is at his best in a debate setting. The only thing he has to do is to go in and let her talk. Don't interrupt her. You know, it's the old classic thing, never interrupt your enemy when he's destroying himself. And that's what it was with the evening with Joe Biden, and it's going to be the same with Kamala Harris. She can't get through a narrative. That's why she's not done any interviews. This is a person who just doesn't do well off the cuff. And if she says anything of substance, it typically gets her into trouble because she'll go off of the rails. And so if Trump goes in and lets her talk, doesn't interrupt her, and do exactly what he did with Joe Biden, I think it could be game over.
Well, do you think it's possible when she comes out and says, well, you're a convicted felon and everybody knows that you deserve to be in jail in the documents case, and tries to get under his skin, it's going to be very hard for him to say, I'm just waiting for my red light to go on, you know?
You know, I thought that during the debate with Joe Biden, and Joe did his best as much as he could with his cognitive decline, he tried to do that to Trump, and it just didn't work. And I think something happened during the trial up in New York under Mershon, that ridiculously unfair judge. Donald Trump really got trained in how to deal with taking insult after insult and sit there and not respond. It was almost like they did him a favor by teaching him how to take the punches like that, and to deliver his outside the courtroom. So in a way, if he has that same mentality, don't take the bait, let her say whatever she wants, smile, laugh it off, and then go on the offensive on the policies and the issues, that will do two things. Number one, it really shows the contrast, because she doesn't have any policy positions she can defend. But the other thing that that does, it totally disarms this criticism that Donald Trump is unhinged, that he can't take a punch, that he wants to overreact to everything, and he always wants to call people names and engage. If he stays away from that, I just think it's a total change of the game.
You were a candidate twice.
Yep.
Look at how the country's changed.
Yeah.
When the president wanted to go reinforce the border, the fear was you're going to alienate Hispanic people, show a heart, sanctuary cities, country was 50-50. Should you do that? I don't know anybody who's embracing the sanctuary cities. I don't know anyone who's talking about how great it is in New York with 67,000 people living off taxpayer money in hotels and taking over soccer fields in and Denver per capita is the greatest. But now she's acting like she's tough on the border. She's acting like she's patriotic. She's acting like she's about law and order. She's even took the subtlety of no taxes on tips. Have you ever seen anything quite like this jiu-jitsu attempt?
Never in my life. You know, it's just absurd. But I like to think that Americans aren't as stupid as maybe they're being played to be. Look, their convention was a well-scripted nonsense of joy and all of these emotional feelings. But if you step back and look at the issues, I mean, they're just wrong on all of them. The economy, the border, take your pick, inflation. They've messed
this
country
up. They didn't
bring
up the New Green Deal. Did you notice that?
Never
did. That's the spine of their existence.
Yeah. And the far left in their party didn't really fuss about it because they know that it's a political loser. The immigration issue, though, is affecting every city. You mentioned New York. Last night I stayed in a hotel room. There were seven illegal immigrants who had to be in the room with me because they wouldn't, you know, had so many.
That is not true.
Oh, yeah. Maybe it was eight. I can't remember. But it was the room was packed, and that's all I could get was a room and sharing it with a whole handful of illegal immigrants.
Well, at least you got a room.
I did.
Yeah.
I didn't get much sleep, but I did get a room.
So the Grand Ayatollah came out today and said he's open to negotiations with the U.S. when it comes to nuclear weapons.
Never trust these people. They're not honest. It's like dealing with Hamas. You're not talking to a state. You're not talking to people who have a level of diplomatic respect for world order. None at all. I wouldn't say anything they say is even close to truth.
Why do you think they're delaying the retaliation for the killing of Hanaya?
I think they know that they're not as strong militarily as they think they were. That little incursion they tried into Israel back in April was a disaster for them.
Do they realize that?
I think they have to know that. And then the assassination, that was one of the most amazing acts of spyfare we've ever seen in the entire world history.
Bomb was placed months prior to the death.
Absolutely incredible. And it takes him out. It's a surgical strike. You know, it wasn't like they killed 400 people to get to one. But it really shows no matter who you are and where you are, you're vulnerable. We'll find you and we'll get you.
So why do you think the delay? You just think that they're worried about it and it wasn't a Iranian? It just happened in Iran?
Well, I think part of it is that they're not sure that this would end well if they try to do something that escalates the conflict, and they don't want to get into it personally. They'd rather let this continue to be done by proxies like Hamas and Hezbollah. That way they can always pretend that they didn't have anything to do with it. But we all know that that's nonsense. They always have everything to do with it, and sooner or later what we have to hope for is that Donald Trump gets back into office, reinstates the sanctions. We don't need to bomb Iran. We proved that in the Trump administration. We need to bankrupt them. Because when you bankrupt them, they can't fund Hamas and Hezbollah and all of the proxies and the Houthis. So that's really what I hope will happen. And I hope the American people understand that if it doesn't happen like that and we continue this Biden-Harris policy of enriching the Iranians, then we have more trouble all over the world.
Governor, last time at this point in the election against Joe Biden, even though he was a sitting president, he was down 8.
Yeah.
Now one or two, up one or two, depending on the poll. Final thought, 10 seconds?
Donald Trump has to just stay focused. Don't take the bait. And remind the American people what it was like when he was president and what it has been like under Biden Harris.
Governor Huckabee will be an outnumbered. He'll be the man in the middle.
That's exactly right. And I'll tell you, those are the four luckiest ladies in America today.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We will honor their memory by restoring a government that puts the American people first. Caused by Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, the humiliation in Afghanistan set off the collapse of American credibility and respect all around the world. And the fake news doesn't want to talk about it. They don't even talk about the 3-year anniversary.
It's nuts because you have a disaster like that. If Trump presided over it, it would be everywhere, especially with him running for president. But you don't see it anywhere. The biggest embarrassment. Remember Saigon off that embassy with those guys going up the stairs trying to get under the chopper, knowing the line was too long. They'd never be able to evacuate. Saigon fell. North Vietnam became Vietnam and became all communist. That scene was forever. You know, Ford and Nixon, and you thought about LBJ. That's how it ended. then you have this Afghanistan war with all these Afghans literally falling off the plane. You don't really see that video 3 years later. Mike Huckabee was talking about that with us, and Lieutenant Colonel Alan West joins us now, Dallas County Republican Party Chair, American Constitutional Rights Union Executive Director. Colonel, 3 years later, no answers and a no-show from Joe Biden at a wreath-laying ceremony.
Yeah, it's incredible, Brian. It's great to be with you. And if you recall back when your radio show was Brian and the Judge, you and I used to have conversations from Afghanistan when I was there during my time as a civilian military advisor in Kandahar. It is absolutely appalling, pathetic, and despicable that you have a president right now that's still on vacation. Now he's in Delaware. Last week he was in California. You have a vice president that no one knows, you know, where she is. She's just out there campaigning. Who's in charge? And furthermore, on a day like yesterday, 13 Americans who needlessly lost their lives because of a decision by Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. She says she was the last person in the room for that decision. They could have at least shown up at Arlington, and instead we get some, you know, watered down little message that I doubt that Kamala Harris actually wrote herself. Some, you know, staffer probably did. But you saw leadership yesterday with the president being there at Arlington National Cemetery to remember these individuals. And just go back and remember just what last week when the Taliban had their big parade. You know, let's not forget that those five senior members of the Taliban that Barack Obama released from Guantanamo Bay were sitting in the review stand.
Unbelievable. As well as the Haqqani, a member of the Haqqani family, the ultimate terrorist. Yeah, the Haqqani Network. Yes. So listen to this. Here's a statement from Kamala Harris. As I have said, President Biden made the courageous and right decision to end America's longest war. By the way, it wasn't our decision. It was his decision, right? Over the past 3 years, our administration has demonstrated we can still eliminate terrorists, including the leaders of Al-Qaeda and ISIS, without troops deployed into combat zones. I will never hesitate to take whatever action necessary, whatever terrorist threatens the American people and our homeland. Okay, number one, everybody says it is worse than ever. Number two, we killed one guy. That's it, one guy. And now, evidently, Scott Mann was telling me yesterday that founded Operation Pineapple, former special operator. Mm-hmm. He said that they were paying something like $40 million a month over to the Taliban to fight ISIS-K, who they've combined with.
Yeah, so in other words, what you find is the Biden-Harris administration is financing terrorism. They have restored Afghanistan to be a terrorist sanctuary, and it is not about fighting them over there. The Biden-Harris administration are releasing terrorists here into the United States of America because of the porous border that we have. And if you go back, Brian, you watched the Democrat National Committee convention. All this talk about women's rights, reproductive rights, whatever. What has happened to the women in Afghanistan now? You did not hear Kamala Harris mention that whatsoever. What happened to, you know, this traveling sisterhood of the, you know, pantsuit? Because these women now are forced right back in under Sharia law. They can't drive. They can't go outside the home without a man. They have no rights and privileges whatsoever. So this hypocrisy of, you know, Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. And again, when you read that statement, you really didn't hear anything about, you know, we accept full responsibility. We, you know, were the ones that caused the tragic death of 13 Americans who should not have been in that position first and foremost. Why did we shut down Bagram Air Base if we wanted to do a withdrawal, if we wanted to do an evacuation? That was an air base that we had control of.
Right. So it's not happening now. And President Trump did speak out about it. He talked about being with the families. Here's what the family said. This is a gold star. This is a gold star father, Mike Schmitz, cut 36.
I think that this administration has shown that they've treated the withdrawal in Afghanistan like the plague. You know, they have stayed as far away from this as they possibly can. So seeing as today was a wreath-laying ceremony at Arlington, I'm not surprised in the least bit that neither one of them would show up for this event. It's pretty obvious, I think, when things get tough, they go running.
And this is a father who noticed every time a body came down the runway at Dover, he checked his watch.
Checked his watch. And you have video proof of that. You have the photos that show that. But it is not just the Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. You already talked about it. It's the media. the collusion, the collaboration, the complicitness that this media has in trying to dishonor the sacrifice of those 13 young men and women and disrespect their families. It's unconscionable, you know, when you really think about it, that they would hide this story because they're more so concerned about politics than doing right by those who made the ultimate sacrifice. Unnecessarily, if I could add that.
Right. Just this thing on illegal immigration, it looks as though Gavin Newsom is now looking to possibly sign a bill that would allow $150,000 to illegal immigrants to buy their first house. How do you feel about that?
So he's going to give $150,000 to illegal
taxpayer money.
Taxpayer money who should not be here, and yet I'm sure you have quite a few homeless veterans in the state of California. Again, you know, this shows the disrespect that the progressive socialist left, the Democrat Party, has for the men and women in uniform, those who have lost their lives and those who are still suffering from the, you know, the outcomes that they are facing. I don't know how any person that served in uniform can vote for these people. And again, we haven't even talked about, you know, Tim Walz, who, you know, his military service record is incredibly tarnished, is tainted, and the lies that he has told. So these people don't care about those who have served in uniform.
So Gavin Newsom's also weighing a first-in-the-nation policy demanding that state colleges hire undocumented college students, undocumented illegal immigrants. He goes, right now, lawmakers passed the first-in-this-nation legislation on Monday, require public universities to hire them, even though they lack work permits. Gavin Newsom, he says he knows it's a politically dicing thing, but it'd be the right thing to do.
It's not the right thing to do. The right thing to do is to take care of Americans, you know, America first, to make America and Americans great again, not illegal immigrants. And so, again, what you see is a program that uses taxpayer dollars out in the state of California, because these are state universities, to hire people that are here illegally instead of hiring our own kids. And let's not, you know, hide this, and let's not forget, what state is Kamala Harris from? So again, you know, you want the United States of America to look like California? You know, give me a break.
So when you talk about China connection with Tim Walz, you know, he went there on his honeymoon with students, okay? And by the way, it's the other side that's weird, correct? He's a big rock star. He's been there 30 mm-hmm. separate times. What is he doing there? Why was that ever not brought up? This guy was in uniform for 24 years. If you are in uniform and you're in the National Guard or Reserves, don't you have to tell the government if you're going to an adversary like China? I don't know the answer to that.
I can give you the answer. Well, back when I was stationed in Vicenza, Italy, I was in an airborne unit there, and I just wanted to cross over. It was still Yugoslavia, but you could go over, and there was a beautiful area called Pula that was a vacation and resort area. I had to let everyone know. I had to file a report that I was going over there. I had to file my travel plans, and when I came back, I had to get debriefed. Just because I went on a vacation with a couple of other lieutenants over to Pula, Yugoslavia, which is today, I think, is Croatia. So, yes, Tim Walz should have been declaring, you know, why he was going over there. He was a uniformed member of the United States military. And why was he not, you know, declaring these trips to a communist China? You know, if you were in the military, you tried to go to Cuba, guess what? You go through all kind of rigmaroles right now, and it's a communist country. Or if you tried to go vacation in Venezuela, you will go through a lot of reports and declarations. Probably would not be able to go to a Venezuela. So there are so many questions about Tim Walz. He really is disqualified to be the second in command of our armed forces.
All right, so here is what Peter Schweitzer has already done some investigating on this. Here's what he said was going on with these students. Cut 26.
There are other comments he made. He told students going to China to downplay their Americanness. There's an account from one student, I haven't been able to independently verify it, saying that he brought back lots of copies of Mao's Little Red Book when he was in China. Mm-hmm. So this is a relationship that's longstanding, and it carried forward when he joined Congress and the actions that he was taking in Congress as well.
So you're allowed to talk bad about China if you're part of this deal, but you're not go too bad. Just make sure you don't sanction them. Listen to this, cut 27.
In that meeting with Premier Li, it's a classic example of elite capture and what the Chinese call big help with a little bad mouth. Tim Walz has talked about the human rights condition in China, but it's never in the context of doing anything about it. And during this meeting with Premier Li, he told Premier Li, well, don't look to the United States as an example of how to do this because we don't know how to do it right either. Those are his descriptions of what he told Premier Li.
So, I mean, there's something that has to be investigated. Didn't they background check this guy?
Obviously not. I mean, you want to talk about one of the worst vetting processes we've ever seen, especially in a presidential and also a vice presidential election. Just look at the Harris-Walz campaign. But again, let's go back and understand, why isn't the media doing their due diligence to bring this out to the American people? They're trying to hide it. We have someone that it seems he's a version of the Manchurian candidate, without a doubt. You know, constant travels over there, indoctrinating American students, not having a firm position, and coming back to what Gavin Newsom is doing, he's made Minnesota a sanctuary for illegal immigration as well. So, and let's not talk about the Islamic jihadist problem they have there in Minneapolis, St. Paul. So this is not the duo that we should have as a viable duo running for president and vice president, but the media is going to do everything they can. And now you hear that they're trying to manipulate the 10th of September debate to the advantage of Kamala Harris, and I'm sure they're going to try to do the same thing for the vice presidential debate.
All right, Colonel, there's a lot of stakes. Real quick, Trump was down by 8 at this point against Biden, by more by more against Hillary Clinton. And we know he underpolls. Everybody admits he underpolls. What are the chances? I know you want him to win. Right now, what do you think his chances of winning?
On a scale of 1 to 10, I give it an 8. I really would, because when you travel around and when you're out here on the streets, people are going to say they hate Donald Trump. But when I ran into a gentleman yesterday who said he's a Democrat, he recognized me, he said he respected me. And I just asked him, what are you voting for? And he had this blank stare on his face. He could not answer. And I think that's the question we need to ask people all across America. What are you voting for?
Hear you. Colonel Alan West, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Take care, Brian.
He was congressman in Florida, and now he's over in Dallas County. He's the Republican Party chair. All right, when we come back, we'll squeeze in some calls. I know you have a lot to say. 1-866-408-7669. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Well, look, we had our very first hearing today, if you will, or our forum, where we had Ben Schaefer, who is one of the actual counter-snipers that was on the ground there. He confirmed not only what type of a sophisticated explosive device that Thomas Crooks had, as well as for the multi-channel detonator, but he also confirmed two key things. One, that the Secret Service refused the offer of communication platforms to be able to ensure that everyone has a comms channel that they can utilize. And two, that they were offered a surveillance drone by local law enforcement, and once again, the Secret Service refused to utilize it.
So that was Corey Mills, who knows everything there is about these type of operations, was down there as member of the committee investigating the assassination attempt of Donald Trump. And they are being slow walked in many cases, being very frustrated with the FBI, who said they're going to cooperate, but they send over people, but they don't send over the documents necessary. What I'm encouraged about is I think both sides know the Secret Service is in charge of protecting people like them, their party, too. Congressman Jason Crow, a Democrat, at Butler yesterday with the others, looking at the scene. Democrat, as I mentioned, cut 38.
You don't have to be a Democrat or a Republican or an unaffiliated to say that there's no room for political violence in America. You know, we have debates. We're going to have tough debates, and we're in the midst of a election cycle right now, and all of us are going to have those tough debates. But in the United States of America, you do not get to attempt to assassinate our elected officials and our candidates. It's unacceptable.
I would hope so, but let's get to the answers. So people are running this. A couple of things. I don't know anything about this assassin. All right, we know that in 10th grade he got cut from the JV rifle team. Well, he got better. We know that we know what he was doing that day, but we don't know how it taught him to make an IED. What did his parents know? I mean, what was the plan? The plan could have been to shoot, detonate the car, get a distraction, and get out. I mean, to me, if one of your plans is walk up to the top of a sloped building in front of everybody and then shoot the former president who wants to be the next president, I'd go, you're not even going to get on that ladder. You're not going to get on that air conditioner. You're not going to get on that roof. But he did. And then to know that he had these encrypted apps and conversations on three of them with people overseas. All right. What does his parents know? Why do his parents have an attitude with media following them around? Why did they quickly cremate the body? Maybe he had tattoos on him. Maybe he was on drugs or some type of over-the-counter situation. Maybe does that matter? I mean, do you want to find out if he was on some type of psychotropic drugs? Do you want to find out if this guy was treating for manic depression? Obviously, huge issues, no friends. Smart guy, most people say. We've seen video of him. Why would you, knowing what's going on with the other assassination attempts, knowing that there's still questions from the 60s with JFK, they're doing movies, now RFK Jr., Martin Luther King, no one thinks that this guy acted alone. So why, knowing this, would you see another assassination attempt and quickly get this bizarre kid, kill him? Amazing. How come they haven't allowed the Secret Service agent, the sharpshooter that took out the assassin, why have they not provided him to the committee for an interview? Nobody knows. They provide other people, but not him. Was he lined up on him early? Was he asking for permission to take the shot? Was he denied that permission? We know about the stuff that we know about is really from journalists and whistleblowers coming forward, saying from the local cops saying we had radios for them to be able to communicate with us. We told them to come pick them up. They never picked them up. Why don't we know that for sure? Why do we need another local cop to tell us that? Why isn't Secret Service have their own inspector general person figuring out what they want, what went wrong? How do we expect to stop it? Now, five people go on leave. Is that going to make it impossible for them to testify? Is that one of the reasons? The fact that I'm questioning that is a problem because we have people that we really respect, like Eli Lake, who served over in Afghanistan.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Come to you from Midtown Manhattan, where the Yankees are red hot, and so is the crime. They have won 5 of 6, by the way. I hope to get your calls this hour. We're going to have Daniel Pletka. It's the first time I've interviewed her. She's a distinguished senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and host with Mark Thiessen of the podcast of What the Hell is Going On. And Daniel wrote this article, and I've always been curious about it. Who is financing these on-campus protests? And Iran's fingerprints are all over it. She's done great research on it. We're going to expose that. Michael Goodwin is standing by, New York Post columnist. His latest column is Deja Blue. The media is promoting Kamala Harris without substance, just like someone named Barack Obama. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
And I don't think any American today would look at what we're seeing today and say, well, I wish we had thousands of troops back in Afghanistan. We've been able to keep take terrorists out, hold them to account without having a large ground force there.
There you go. That is John Kirby, the admiral really letting me down. Abigail Tobacco, a nation mourns Dems duck. 3 years later, still no one pays the price. The Biden administration never held accountable, and Trump steps up.
Number two.
We agreed to the same rules. I don't know. It doesn't matter to me. I'd rather have it probably on. But the agreement was that it would be the same as it was last time. In that case, it was muted. I didn't like it the last time, but it worked out fine.
There you go. The debate about the debate. The rules, the location, the audience, the microphones, all being negotiated as both sides accuse. Posture, push, and pull, as early voting, believe it or not, is now just weeks away.
Number one.
The choice in this election is very clear, and I'm confident that if elected as president again, Donald Trump, he has the strength and the backbone to stand up to the military-industrial complex and keep us out of these unnecessary wars of choice.
Yeah, I don't love Tulsi Gabbard's foreign policy, but I really respect her service and her mind and her political acumen. The campaign for the last 70 days, the momentum must be earned, and Trump is beginning to earn it. Thanks to Governor Kemp coming on board in Georgia, RFK leaving his campaign to join Trump. And now Tulsi Gabbard left her party, left her independent streak, and will be endorsing Donald Trump. She will work hard for him and help him get ready for the debate. Guess what? The VP says a one-on-one before the end of the month. That's Friday. Who's she going to pick? Michael Goodwin, if you were a betting man, who would you think she's going to sit down with?
Oh, good morning, Brian. Look, I think it's going to be a friendly, right? It's going to be somewhere where there are softballs. They're probably negotiating some things that are off limits. So I suspect it will probably be either the New York Times, CNN, MSNBC, Washington Post. I think anything other than that would be, you know, a surprise, would be risky for her. She's going to want to set these ground rules that most organizations, I think, would not like. It will be interesting to see if whoever she picks, if that organization does admit that there were negotiations about things that were off topic or whatever. Look, the as you know, Brian, it's not that hard to get through a 10 or a 15-minute interview, certainly for a professional politician who's been in office and just finished the convention. The question is, can you go longer? Can you get into in-depth things? Because the pressure on the interviewer will be to touch on topics, and that's a formula for, like, you know, appetizer. You just get a bite and move on to the next one. Can she really do an in-depth interview that explores two or three topics, such as the border, such as the economy, such as the world situation? If I were doing the interview, I would basically stick to the big topics and go deep on them rather than just a surface trip across a whole lot of topics.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. At one point, you got to think she's going to take a question after an event or two. She's already taken about three or four, and she's going to get herself into trouble. But you say this is all about hype, and it's all about marketing. She's not about substance. We know a month ago she was considered one of the biggest disasters in vice presidential history. Nothing's changed. They're just trying to jam it down our throats now, and I can't believe how compliant the press has been.
I'm surprised you're surprised.
Yeah.
I mean, look, this is, as I wrote in my column, this is 2008 all over again. This is Hopey Changey 2.0, in the great line of Sarah Palin. This is hiding the ball behind a charismatic person, an appealing person on the surface, whom the media has said is our choice to defeat Donald Trump. And therefore, we, the media, are not going to spoil the fun. We're not going to ruin this. We're not going to be racist and sexist and demand and question her fitness. We'll leave that to the Republicans. We're just going to help her along. And so that's what I think we've been seeing all along. Look, it was bad enough with Biden. But here you have, as you say, somebody who was a joke politically, somebody who got the nomination without winning a single delegate in a fight, who was handed to her in a way that would make the old bosses of Tammany Hall blush, that you could nominate a president that way. And everything was scripted for her. There were guardrails around everything. The Praetorian Guard was there to make sure. I mean, think about it, Brian. The media is not even angry that she's not doing interviews for the most part. They're quite content because they want her to win. And even this thing with Mark Zuckerberg and you know, in the 2021 and trying to order them to censor, which we know has been true. We know it was proven in that court case and that brought by the Missouri Attorney General, I believe. But Kamala Harris was part of that, presumably. She had to know about that, just as Joe Biden knew in the 2016 race that Barack Obama and the CIA and the FBI were spying on Donald Trump. Joe Biden knew about that. So a vice president knows all this stuff. So she knew about the censorship. Will anyone ask her about that? I'm not holding my breath.
I want you to hear, I mean, this is what encourages me. Some other people are asking for her to do some interviews. Here's Jonathan Martin of Politico, Cut 12.
What's incredible is the party is so united that they have given her a pass, effectively, to reinvent herself whole cloth from her 2019 ill-fated bid for the presidency. Look, the convenient part about Kamala Harris's candidacy, and for that matter, Donald Trump's candidacy, neither of them are tethered to any deep philosophical
views. Yeah, this is not a policy.
No. So, look, she knows she has to run to the political center, and she is doing that, and she's running for how she ran in 2019. And the party just wants to beat Trump, so of course they're fine with that. They're not going to say a peep about it, but that's clearly what she's doing. Look, obviously, Democrats, John, won the summer, right? They had a near-death experience at the start of the summer. We're going to Labor Day, and now Democrats are now on a chance to win the election, which they were not.
Yeah, Trump won the spring.
They were not Democrats 2 months ago.
Right, and he went on to say, you know, I think she's got to sit down and talk to some people, especially this debate before or after the debate. I mean, she's really going to go in there cold, and the last thing we see is her losing herself in press conferences with friendly interviews about space and about school buses.
Brian, the way he structured it, you know, she's got to sit down with somebody and talk. Whatever she does, he'll give her a pass. It'll be fine. It's enough. You know, it wasn't perfect, but she did it. So that's why I'm not holding my breath for this. I don't think this is a big moment. I don't think it's going to the media will certainly trumpet it, you know. Oh, look what, you know, she took away a talking point for right-wing Republicans and right-wing media and Trump acolytes. And that'll be how they cover it. Not what she says, but that she did it. So they've really lowered the bar to where there's no possibility that it could go wrong unless she shows up, you know, delirious or something, or says something out of her mouth just so crazy that it can't be ignored. But then it'll probably be treated as a joke. My point is, I have no faith in the media at this point. You go back to 2008, as I do in the column, and the way they protected Obama, you look at the way they protected Biden when they knew, they had to know that he was losing grip. They had to know. Look how they protected him in the 2020 campaign, letting him in the basement. Look how they lied about so many things. And it's fine with them. All they care about is Donald Trump doesn't get elected. It's like that Harry Reid line. He lied about Mitt Romney not paying taxes, and when confronted with that, he said, well, it worked. That's the Democrats, that's the media's view of elections. They are not the media. They are propagandists.
So I want to bring you to another area. We'll see what happens. First off, your thoughts about Trump at this point, the chance of him winning in November. Here we are going into Labor Day. At this point, do you think he's got better than a 50-50 chance?
I don't know if it's better. I think it's around 50-50. You know, it's easy enough, Brian, to imagine this going either way, and it could be significant changes either way. But the sentencing is coming up in New York. There's all this noise about the documents cases, about the immunity issues. The Democrats and their media handmaidens are going to keep this front and center as much as possible, just as we saw at the convention. How many speakers brought up the Manhattan case, which, if you don't know anything about it, sounds really serious. 34 felonies. Wow. What did he do? It's so wrong. Nothing. Nothing. It's a nothing case. It was trumped up for this purpose. And that's how they're going to use it. So, look, I think there are booby traps out there for both candidates. My good friend Ed Rollins, who has, you know, been around politics forever, helped engineer Ronald Reagan's great 1984 landslide, he has said, you know, when there's a landslide, it happens kind of slowly, but then when you come to the actual election, it's how the undecideds vote and who votes. And that's where you can get like a 5-point lead becomes a 10-point landslide. So we may not see that happen until it's happened. But I think it's probably, unless there's absent some great event by either candidate, some major mistake or some great achievement in some way. I think it's probably going to remain close all the way down the stretch, and we may be surprised at how the undecideds vote and who actually votes.
I think there's a lot left to do. I think that Trump's big advantage of the top issue is the top issue is the economy. The second issue is immigration. Third is abortion. Two of three, he's almost in double digits on better. And it's not his words. It's not his phrase. It's not his ads. It's his actions. So I think that's going to help.
I think he's gotten better at connecting Harris to the Biden. I mean, he was running against Biden and he had all those advantages. He was thrown off course by the selection of Harris. But in fact, she's the vice president. She's part of all those decisions. Joe Biden says no daylight between us. So I think the Trump campaign has finally turned toward those linking Harris to those policies and not attacking her personally. I think that's a big change in their strategy, at least as far as I can see it.
Thanks so much, Michael Goodwin. It's going to be interesting. Pick up his column. It's Deja Blue. The media is promoting Harris like Obama. Harris has already proven herself needing to be propped up. Obama didn't. They just didn't want to push him too hard. He seemed to be passing all the tests, and he did sit down for interviews. He came into Fox and Friends when he was a state senator. When he was promoting his book, he would take questions. And a lot of them was aggravating him to him, by the way. But he did. And when he was going against Hillary Clinton, he took questions. When he got the nomination is when he stopped talking to us. Michael Goodwin, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
All right. Your call's next, 1-866-408-7669. We'll go from New Jersey to Columbus to New York. And then to Daniel Pletka at the bottom of the hour. Don't move.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So we want that opportunity for the American people to see Donald Trump for who he is. Not censored, not muted, but the unfettered guy that he is going to be if he becomes president again, especially now that we know that the Supreme Court has given him the authority to have unfettered power. And so I think it's really important that the American people get to see these two candidates live, unmuted.
You know, it's so amazing. It gives me a second of pause every time I see Mitch Landrieu, when I see Michael Tyler, when you see Anita Dunn, and now this is Ian Sams. You know who they work for? President Biden. You know who they were telling us is a great guy? He's fantastic by the scenes. He's full of energy. Greatest economy ever. All these guys. 3 weeks ago. Now all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, I'm working with the new guy. I don't even know what the president's doing. What president? President Biden? Oh, he's on vacation. Okay, that's where your loyalty lands. Why would I believe a word you say, especially Ian Sams, a propagandist by definition? It probably says on his business card. So wants the American people to see him. Yeah, we saw him, and you will see him. But let's give Kamala Harris a chance to talk, shall we? Because all we got, we could see that she can read. We don't know if she can talk. So let's kill the microphone and let her finish, because that's what you wanted last time, and that went really, really well. You're so freaked out by it, you want to make sure that Donald Trump's mic is up. And you know why? Because you want to hear Kamala Harris, be able to say, excuse me, I'm talking. Excuse me, let me finish. I will finish now. And then we're going to go, wow, a woman taking power. She must be president. When Mike Pence wiped the floor with her, she had one interruption and they said, Mike Pence, okay, you can finish. And they said, that's what everyone talked about, that and the fly. But Jason Miller came back and had this to say, cut 18. He's senior Trump advisor.
Well, I think Kamala Harris is looking for an off-ramp. I think they're several days into their debate prep and they realize that they're in trouble. Keep in mind, the last time someone got in the political ring with President Trump, it ended their career. Joe Biden went from a sitting president to basically an afterthought. And so I think the Harris camp is really starting to freak out here.
Yeah, I think so, too. They say that his theory is that she's not doing well in debate prep, and now they want all these rules. The one thing that's unsubstantiated is they were saying that she wanted to be able to sit and use notes, but no one said that that is actually the case. I'm pretty sure that she would get laughed out of the country if she said that. I would just like to take notes, and I like your questions ahead of time. And I'd love to know how Donald Trump would answer. But one thing Trump did say, and I understand his frustration, he was watching the ABC show, and he was seeing Tom Cotton handle all these questions from Jonathan Carl, who, like Jake Tapper, can get to the bottom of things, can ask questions, but they are freaked out by Trump. And since Jonathan Carl did his book, he thinks Trump is totally unworthy. So he's incapable of having a normal conversation and treating him like one of the finalists to be the next president of the United States. And as he started saying that she changed her position here, changed her position there, Tom Cotton said, no, she hasn't. No, she hasn't. How do you know? She hasn't said it. She hasn't said it. She hasn't said it. That, to me, should have went right back to the Kamala Harris camp. And they should say, I don't know how much longer we can keep this up, because this is getting out of control. The former president has done 19 interviews in the last 3 weeks. She's done zero. Brian Kilmeade Show, Daniel Pletka next. Who is financing this campus unrest? Don't move.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I think that the university is allowing their own fear of what unhinged chaos that these students can bring upon the school to dictate their decisions. And, you know, as we're starting a new school year, it's imperative that these administration members keep in mind that these overtly anti-Semitic and blatantly illegal actions will continue on the campus so long as they go unpunished, and that the administration needs to hold students accountable, or they are, in effect, condoning this behavior and allowing it to persist.
So that was Amanda Silverstein, a student at Cornell, noting there's already massive protests at Cornell, anti-Semitic, anti-Israel protests, and I imagine pro-Hamas. Now, I was stunned when all this propped up, when the Israel, October 7th happened, Israel goes into Gaza. Next thing you know, there's this unrest at college campuses, like here in New York and Columbia, at City College, and then all around. We're covering these live protests at UCLA in the morning. Daniel Pletka joins us now, a distinguished senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and host with Mark Thiessen of the podcast, What the Hell is Going On? She's wrote a series of columns about this, about what is really fueling this, from academia to outside forces. Danielle, welcome to Brian Kilmeade Show. Thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure.
Danielle, first off, what made you realize when you were watching these protests that this wasn't organic like the 1960s anti-Vietnam protests?
So, I mean, one of the most important things for people to understand when they think about the difference between Vietnam and the current protests, the sort of pro-Hamas anti-Semitic protests that we saw on college campuses and that we're now starting to see again as the semester starts, is that during Vietnam, we had tens of thousands of American young men on the ground in Vietnam. We were actively fighting a war. We have nobody on the ground in Gaza. There are no American boots on the ground. These are not the compatriots and friends of these students. They have nothing to do with this. For them, this is an ideological battle. And for most of them, it's a, you know, go along to get along kind of ignorance. The problem is who's leading them here. And those are some very malign forces.
And who is?
So, you know, again, without taking away from the sense that some students legitimately have the right to stand up and say that they are concerned about, you know, human freedom, about human rights in Gaza. I think that's fine, and I think that there's no better time to be that kind of person than when you're in college. The problem is what's going along with it. It's the Hamas flags. It's the Hezbollah flags. It's the Palestinian Islamic Jihad flag, and in some cases, ISIS flags. You're seeing outside agitators, some of them coming from Canada, from designated terrorist organizations, plus you're seeing money coming from the Middle East, mostly from Qatar, plus you're seeing interference per our own Director of National Intelligence from the Iranian government. They are the ones that are fanning the flames here.
No doubt about it. Do you think it's with money? What could they possibly use to entice Americans that they have a point of view that they should embrace?
So, first of all, I think that there's an enormous amount of ignorance about what's actually happening on the ground. You know, if you ask a lot of these students what happened on October 7th, they will tell you a series of lies. Now, you know, when someone doesn't know what country the Queen of England was from, if you've seen those sort of viral interviews on the street, you can't expect that they understand much about what's going on in the Middle East. So, you know, some of them are just, for lack of a better word, idiots. The problem that we see is that there's money coming in from American Muslims for Palestine, from Students for Justice in Palestine, from a group called Sami Doon in Canada. All of these groups are getting money from overseas. We do not have in any way a handle on it. And it, even worse, even more outrageous for your listeners, is they are doing so for the most part in a tax-exempt way. It's incredible.
It is incredible. The other thing is, you point out to the whole BDS movement to fund Israel and stop America from funding them at all. You say it's the DEI movement plays a role too, and so does the places like TikTok, these apps.
So what we see happening is very interesting. You know, people like to say, well, there's no difference between Facebook and TikTok and Instagram. And the answer is, yeah, there is a difference. Actually, you know who runs Facebook, because he just wrote a letter admitting that he was doing the bidding of the White House, Mark Zuckerberg, right? The Communist Party of China owns TikTok. And what the TikTok algorithm has been doing since October 7th is platforming anti-Semitic, viral push posts, hate posts against Israel, against Jews, and these get millions and millions of hits. The best example of this was Osama bin Laden's letter to America. Now, you know, this was a long time ago in some ways. Osama bin Laden, the former head of al-Qaeda, the dead head of al-Qaeda who planned the 9/11 attacks, wrote this virulently anti-Semitic letter to the American people. And all of these sort of Gen Zers and millennials discovered this. Now, how did they discover it? They discovered it on TikTok, which pushed it out to all these people, and it was getting tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of hits. This is where people get their information.
It's insane, and that's why I'm so disappointed both campaigns are using it. They know it should be banned, but there's so many people on it, they just want to get votes. Hopefully they snap out of it after. You also believe the DEI movement plays a role. You think it's a driving force. In what respect?
So what you really see is that there's a nexus of groups where there are ideological agreement, right? You see that the DEI movement, along with critical race theory, along with the Marxism that underpins that, all of these bad ideas come together. And, you know, one of the things that I see anecdotally, but I'm willing to bet that if you reached out, you would hear it from pretty much everyone who's had this experience as well, is that Jews who confront the DEI establishment in their workplace and say, I'm afraid of the circumstances out there, I'm afraid to walk the street, right? The same DEI officials who during COVID said, now, I don't want to hear any abuse of Asians. We don't want to hear anything about China. We don't want to hear anything about your lab theory, because that's all anti-Asian. They are doing nothing for Jews in America who are afraid, who are getting physically assaulted, in one or two instances have been killed. They are doing nothing for them. Rather, they are reinforcing this idea that there's some sort of settler colonialist, I'm putting that in quotes, we're not on video, settler colonialist conspiracy in Israel that needs to be combated by righteous Americans.
So to me, why is it in, being that there's Jews, there are Democrats and Republicans, many prominent ones in Colombia, they forced the ouster in some cases of that Colombia president, and a lot of donations have gone down, even though I know their coffers are full. Why isn't there more collective outrage and curiosity and mission to get rid of this funding and start unwinding some of the things that you've brought up?
Well, you know, I think it's just starting to accelerate. And, you know, Virginia Fox, who's the chairwoman of the Education Committee in the House of Representatives, has been really terrific in holding these people to account. Elise Stefanik, who was the original person who grilled these absolutely ignorant university leaders, was was sort of ripping the lid off. But this is really, I hate to use all of these cliches, but this is the tip of the iceberg of the corruption in academia. People don't learn about facts. People learn about tropes. They learn about ideology, and they are not being given the tools to think critically about the information that confronts them. And the schools are afraid to stand up to their kids. That's why we saw all of these encampments on campuses with the professoriate and the administration refusing to stand up to overt calls for violence, overt calls for genocide, anti-Semitism, right, terrorism. It's the more we see of it, the more we need to realize that we need to clean up our academia.
Daniel Pletko is trying to unwind, is with us now. She's trying to unwind the funding and the support for the anti-Semitic, anti-American, anti-Israeli movement in this country. And you start off one of your comments on National Review, I think it's out today, that says that Avril Haines released a statement, this is the DNI director, that the Iranian regime is providing financial support to American protesters. Now, you later cite that Josh Gottheimer, a Democrat from New Jersey, said, yeah, we're looking to pursue this. Take that letter from the director of National Intelligence to House and Senate committees and go further and demand public disclosure on all this. I just think that we could be, there's so many issues where we can't get on the same page. Nobody in the squad could care less. They're probably, we know they are big supporters of this, Ilhan Omar and AOC, but most of Congress isn't. Why couldn't this be a bipartisan push?
Well, what I completely agree with you, first of all. I think the problem here is that we, for example, we couldn't get language condemning anti-Semitism across through the Senate, right? We couldn't get language that was part of an executive order issued by Donald Trump and kept by Joe Biden. You don't get more bipartisan than that. Congress tried to codify it, the House passed it, and the Senate won't take it up because Chuck Schumer doesn't want to take it up because they're afraid of the left wing of their party. And that's the problem with all of this. I mean, what sounds more obvious than you hear from the Director of National Intelligence, hey, the Iranian regime, the world's most powerful terrorist regime in the, is now funding and fomenting on-campus demonstrations, says Avril Haines. Oh, but who is it? How are they doing it? Who are they paying? What are the tools that they're using? None of that information was forthcoming. And unfortunately, while Josh Gottheimer is really great, and there are a bunch of other Democrats who are really forward-leaning, especially in this election year, we are looking at a lot of mainstream Democrats who are afraid of angering the squad and the growing far-left constituency and mostly anti-Semitic, anti-Israel constituency in the Democratic Party.
And look, on the right, this extreme right that they're afraid of to a degree, but I don't think that's going to affect an election. When you talk about Democrats, they've already gotten their message. They saw two squad members losing primaries that were vehemently anti-Israel. This is the time to show some courage, especially if, I don't know, Danielle, I think according to reports, Senator Schumer is Jewish. I mean, do you think that even though he does not like Netanyahu, does he think the big – do you know that among the leadership, nobody's upset by the way he's prosecuting the war? They're upset with Netanyahu for allowing October 7th to happen, and people have political views of him. I get it. And they were unhappy with what he was doing with the judiciary. I understand it. But the way the war's going, you're not going to get much of a divide among Israelis. So what are they doing? Boycotting his joint session of Congress. That includes the vice president, Kamala Harris, and Senator Schumer wants no part of it, called for a regime change in Israel.
This is the same Senator Schumer who signed the invitation letter for Netanyahu to come speak, by the way. Look, there's a lot of schizophrenia. And the problem now in Washington is that while I suspect that if you and I sat down over a beer with Chuck Schumer, he would say a lot of the things that you and I are saying right now. These campus demonstrations are outrageous. The anti-Semitism is appalling. The squad is a scourge. I suspect he thinks all of those things. The problem is that the percentage of the Democratic Party that represents the kind of views that we see from the squad, virulently anti-Israel, pro-Hamas, pro-Hezbollah, pro-Iran, those guys are important. And that's why Kamala Harris met with the uncommitted. That's why she went out and talked to these people who are nothing other than haters. The same people who call not the right, not Donald Trump, but call Joe Biden Genocide Joe.
I know. Wait till they get hold of Trump if he takes over. They're really not going to like that.
You can bet your bottom dollar on that one.
Right. I just think that very few people are really looking into this. And now that we're back in school and knowing that it's not going away, and now that you see what happened in Cornell, you know, Columbia says they're going to come back even stronger. And what happened, Danielle, for those people that created so much unrest and took over that building? They all got a warning. Nobody got jail time for doing that on the campus of Columbia University.
No, it's really, there are so few universities that have shown any courage. There are some good ones. You know, Dartmouth has been good. Vanderbilt's chancellor is extremely courageous. They prosecuted, they expelled. But other than that, the seven other Ivy League schools have been a disgrace to academia and to fair-mindedness and to, frankly, the whole concept of education. The only thing we can do is keep jumping up and down, keep screaming, keep the administration's feet to the fire, and use the only tool that they really care about. Because they don't care about this international condemnation. They care about money.
Danielle Petko, thanks for your great work. I look forward to talking to you again. I appreciate it.
Take care.
All right. Did a great job. Very few people are doing it. No one's doing close to what she's doing. Back in a moment, Brian Kilmeade Show. I'll take your calls.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
By the way, they should be explaining without us asking. Mm-hmm. That's the whole point of them doing these press conferences and these meetings.
Yeah.
The same way these politicians have meetings for their donors and they have rallies and press conferences explaining themselves and their agendas to certain groups, they should have to explain themselves to black people the same way.
I'll take white people, too, if you don't mind. I'd like to know something she stands for, aside from price controls and gouging, or she calls it gauging. Ron, listen, that was Charlemagne the God, by the way. Ron, WABC. Ron, what's on your mind?
So about the subject you were just talking about with the other gentleman, about the schools, I'm sorry.
Daniel Pletka, yeah.
Talking about, sorry. That going back to old-fashioned, taking out full-page New York Times, Newsday, Washington Post ads to say the universities that are allowing this kind of thing, we should shame them. Full-page ads to say your students will be in jeopardy of not getting jobs later or having this kind of a no-backbone jellyfish attitude. And we will push that, you know, that kind of thing should be done. It just used to be done all the time.
Ron, it's already happened on Wall Street. I've already said that people getting turned out for internships, they're from certain universities, they have to declare where they feel on things. There's a whole generation that does not agree with what's happening with these 18 to 22-year-olds. They're being manipulated. What I didn't bring up, Ron, was there are teaching courses of anti-Israeli courses, pro-Palestinian courses. So part of that course is activism on part of this. So they were ready to go. But just like the trans movement, just like Black Lives Matter movement, they're militant and they're angry. And I doubt a lot of this is sincere. I really do. I doubt the sincerity of all this. Do you think anybody even knows what Hamas is? Do they even understand what October 7th is? When you ask a lot of these knuckleheads, they say October 7th never happened. I mean, what are we supposed to say? We're not saying the Holocaust never happened. That's crazy enough statement. We're talking about something that you can go see and touch for yourself. There was a museum in downtown New York City with actual photos.
Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Yeah, it's very approachable and privileged to be with you this hour. Armin Katay in the bottom of the hour, six-time New York Times bestselling author. His latest book, The Price, takes you inside college football today, the era of chaos. And what we're witnessing right now is all unprecedented with these players getting paid. So many of you are huge college football fans. For those of you who have any interest at all, just know this. It's all changing dramatically with name, image, and likeness, and now players getting minimum salaries, players going for the highest bidder, legendary coaches leaving because they don't like the new calculus. We'll discuss that. Harris Faulkner also will do a simulcast with us here on the Brian Kilmeade Show, so he'll be on Fox News Channel as well as on. That's always fun. And, of course, I'll encourage you to get on the phones, 1-866-408-7669. Just a quick note, so I'm going to be in Peekskill, New York. I know it seems like a long time away, but October 20th, it's going to be History, Liberty, and Laughs. I'm able to go over my seven history books, two sports books, and just talk about some of the things, motivational, inspirational, and patriotic. It's all winning the war on history. So we'll talk about that. Meanwhile, let's go to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
And I don't think any American today would look at what we're seeing today and say, well, I wish we had thousands of troops back in Afghanistan. We've been able to keep take terrorists out, to hold them to account without having a large ground force there.
It's so disappointing because he's Admiral Kirby first. There was nothing successful about leaving Afghanistan. We did not benefit by not leaving 2,500 people behind. Here's why. It's in our interest to know what's going on in China, Russia, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. You know why? Because that's where terrorists and our enemies are. They wouldn't have messed with us if we were there. Our intelligence would have been through the roof. Ask the FBI director if we're better off. Admiral, you know better.
Number two.
We agreed to the same rules. I don't know. It doesn't matter to me. I'd rather have it probably on. But the agreement was that it would be the same as it was last time. In that case, it was muted. I didn't like it the last time, but it worked out fine.
Yep, Trump on the debate. Debate on the debate. The rules, the location, the audience, the microphones, all being negotiated by both sides, accusing the others of being afraid of the other. The push and pull. And bottom line is, early voting starts. And I think that she needs this.
Number one.
The choice in this election is very clear, and I'm confident that if elected as president again, Donald Trump, he has the strength and the backbone to stand up to the military-industrial complex and keep us out of these unnecessary wars of choice.
Tulsi Gabbard weighing in, the National Guardsman, congresswoman from Hawaii, the camp, former Democrat. Now with 70 days left, she makes it clear. She's not only helping Donald Trump in his debate prep because she took apart Kamala Harris last time, she's also part of the team, and I think she'll be part of the administration should Donald Trump win. He's got a good shot at doing it. Just some poll numbers still worth going over. So we don't have a full picture of what kind of bounce, and we're expecting a bounce from that Democratic convention. If you just look at the ratings, people are looking at her differently. That's their hope anyway. But Trump, with RFK aboard, wins the one-on-one matchup with Harris 49-48. Vice president comes out on top 47-45 when third-party candidates were added. We're talking about Jill Stein, this libertarian guy, Chase Oliver, along with Cornel West. So you put them in. She has a slightly. These are national polls. Just gives you an idea of the trend. But just some of the anger that RFK's gotten from his sister continues to blast her brother. Wow. They claim to set the family on fire, a father's memory on fire. Then you got this other person. I don't really watch the West Wing. Bradley Whitford, he slammed actress Cheryl Hines of Cheryl Hines is the wife of RFK Jr. Now, she's not necessarily supporting Trump like RFK is, like her husband is, but she's supporting her husband. So here's what this idiot Bradley Whitford puts out. Hey, Cheryl Hines, way to stay silent while your lunatic husband throws his support behind adjudicated rapist who brags about stripping women about their fundamental rights, the actor wrote in a post on X. People are absolutely insane. And I just love when actors weigh in. They're so angry about what I don't even understand. On the top things that people care about, immigration is now second. It dropped 7 points, still second. economy remains number one at 38%. That's where Trump benefits. Number three is health care. Number three is abortion. Number four is health care. And they're about even on health care and abortion. She's got a 4-point advantage. But if you want to know what should be next, it should be interviews. So this vice president could tell us how she's different from the one who ran in 2019, who was a senator in 2016, and vice president in 2020. Listen to Tom Cotton spar. Cut seven.
You would have thought watching the Democratic convention last week that the Democrats are not in office, that they're not in power, that they're campaigning against an incumbent Republican, when in reality, she's been part of the failures of the Biden-Harris administration for 4 years. And when she campaigned for president in her own right, she did, in fact, promise things like decriminalizing illegal immigration and taking away health insurance.
But that's his position she's clearly changed on, and she said she has changed. Yes, 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 she has.
No, she has not. John, she has not said that. She's not. You pointed out, Senator Sanders, repeatedly things that her campaign has said. Anonymous aides speaking on background to reporters has said, well, she no longer believes these things. Okay, maybe she has changed her position on things like taking away your health insurance and confiscating your gun. If she has changed her position, she owes it to the American people to come out and say in her own words when she changed and why she changed.
Yes, and when she does that, you know who she alienates? The left that got Joe Biden elected, who he was subscribing to their newsletter. So you can't do it by not saying anything. Democrats should demand more. Forget about me. Forget about you. How about Democrats demand more? Should you nominate somebody that's not comfortable talking to other people? Isn't that a bad thing to do? Brian Kilmeade Show on Fox News Channel next.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Coming up in a few minutes, Armen Katayan is going to talk about his brand new book. It's called Price, What It Takes to Win in College Football in This Era of Chaos. And it is chaos. Don't blame yourself if you can't figure it out. Also, we're going to do a simulcast right now on two things we've been talking about with Harris Faulkner. Sandra Smith is filling in the Faulkner Focus. It's going to be the Afghanistan withdrawal. We're also going to talk about anti-Semitism on campus. Just talked to Daniel Pletka about this. Fascinating. Outside forces, TikTok, all fomenting the unrest on campuses, and all these professors, this faculty seems to be buying into it. I'm not buying into it. You're not buying into it. But we need to decode it, because even on move-in day at Barnard College and Cornell, first week of school, already massive protests around. Craziness. You're going to tell me they understand the nuances of the Middle East? So you're going to hear a longer introduction to get to me as they come out of break? Just put up with it a little bit, because we're going to be on the number one network in the country. You can see us on Fox Nation.
Listeners as well. Let's start right here. Yesterday marked 3 years since the Abbey Gate suicide bombing in Afghanistan. 13 American service members were killed. Former President Trump honored those lost at Arlington National Cemetery. He ripped into the Biden-Harris administration, over the botched exit that led to that deadly attack.
We'll get the resignations of every single senior official who touched the Afghanistan calamity to be on my desk at noon on Inauguration Day.
As Vice President, Kamala bragged that she was the last person in the room. She repeatedly praised the decisions, and she said it led to a catastrophe, but it was worth it. The incompetence and weakness on display from the Biden-Harris administration was an insult to every soldier, sailor, airman, and Marine who ever served in our U.S. military.
Trump attended the wreath-laying ceremony yesterday, but President Biden and VP Harris did not go to any commemoration ceremonies. White House National Security Communications Advisor John Kirby faced questions about that yesterday.
Neither going to Arlington nor any individual paper statement is ever going to be enough to repay these families and to try to make sure that they know they're supported and that they're loved and they're respected and admired for what they're going through. And nothing's going to assuage their grief. Nothing we can say, nothing we can do, no flowers you can lay is going to take that pain away.
Family members of those 13 service members say the Biden administration has never reached out to them in the 3 years since the Kabul bombing. My heart breaks for them, Brian. We had a Gold Star mother on our program yesterday on America Reports. And the grieving is still like this happened yesterday. I mean, she lost her son, Ryan. And to think this administration has never reached out. I wonder, Brian, what you think about the fact that we can roll tape on Kamala Harris saying she was the last person in the room with Biden when they made the decision that led to this horrifically chaotic withdrawal.
The biggest military disaster in our history, Sandra. We've been over it. In fact, I played the sound bites from the families on our show, from your show yesterday. And the one thing you could find, too, CNN did one interview yesterday, and that mom, the mother, I think, shocked them when she came out and said, yeah, I never heard anything from Joe Biden, except for I watched him check his watch at Dover when my son, his casket was coming out down the ramp. I noticed that. So did the other families. Number two is for him to stay on the beach on a day like this. People make mistakes, but this was the biggest mistake in American history. And this was something that was anticipated by the generals who testified that they told Joe Biden that this was going to happen. Joe Biden tells George Stephanopoulos, no one ever told me, and nobody wants to pursue that. The other thing they're trying to do is say, well, the vice president was the last one in the room. But listen to her statement that she wrote, she put out. As I have said, President Biden made the courageous and right decision to end America's longest war over the past three decades. Our administration has demonstrated we can still eliminate terrorists, including the leaders of Al-Qaeda and ISIS. First off, if you talk to the FBI director, he knows we've lost all our eyes and ears in the area. It's been devastating. He's scared to death of what's coming through our southern border at the same time. It's an impossible mix of terror hell. Number two is, you notice she said, as I've said, President Biden made the courageous decision. She didn't say we, because she wants to be able to say that's him, not me, but we're not buying it and we shouldn't.
Just like she hasn't been in charge of the border either, right? Brian, the family is grieving. You'd think John Kirby was defending Kamala Harris and Joe Biden not being at these events, but you'd think this could be a step in the right direction. How about just show up?
Oh, yeah.
I know so many of these families feel that way. We talk to them on this network and our program all the time.
I'll give you an example. You know, there were things leading up to 9/11 that said Bin Laden determined to attack.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were mad at President Bush and Condoleezza Rice for not picking that up. But you know what they did? They sat down for an after-action report. They listened to it. A book was released on it. Do you know that this president has a after-action report done? I know two people that headed it up that were there at the landing point where these people were emptying out those carriers full of people at a third country. And he wrote it up. This president refused to read it. So they said, you know what? We'll give an oral presentation. They said, fine. They said, well, make it 15 minutes. And they said, okay, we'll knock it down to 15 minutes. Then they got a call. He doesn't want to hear it. Do you think that George W. Bush didn't think sometimes when he goes to those 9/11 commemorations 5, 10, 15, 20 years later, doesn't think to himself, I wonder if there's something I can do? Do you think it's easy? But when you're a leader, you show up good days and in bad.
Yeah.
And you take responsibility.
Fair enough. But they did not. Meanwhile, Brian, the Wall Street Journal editorial board is responding to Vice President Harris's statement marking 3 years since the botched withdrawal. She called Biden's decision courageous, as you mentioned, Brian, and right. They say, quote, it's good to know what she thinks, but it doesn't reflect well on her judgment as a potential commander in chief. The withdrawal decision was arguably the worst of Mr. Biden's presidency. That Ms. Harris now embraces this failure suggests more of the same ahead if she wins in November. Do you think voters will see it that way, Brian?
I hope so. And, you know, when people come out and they say that General Kelly came out and said he had negative things to say about soldiers, but when President Biden, if you read and talk to people like General McMaster, I had him on the show for a half hour yesterday, three-star general, he's never heard any of that. In fact, he thinks that he gets moved generally by any time he sees a man or woman in uniform. And when you see him show up and lay that wreath, he appreciates it. And when people say, after your 20-year war, I'm proud of the way we left it, you know how many people watch that happen? They look around. They're missing a limb. They're not the same psychologically. They lost their marriage or lost their loved one. And they say, wow, this is the way you leave a 20-year war? That's my legacy? Giving it back to the people we took it from? Taking away the freedom that for 20 years that women and children had, as imperfect as it was, and you say you think that's good and the Over Horizon watch on terror is effective? We still don't even know who killed those 13 at Abbey Gate. We know who the suicide bomber perhaps was. We don't know who was behind it, what group was behind it, but we do know this. If you happen to be putting water bottles into your trunk and got blown up, we are sorry because Joe Biden killed you for the wrong reason.
Yeah.
painful for so many, just still so raw talking to those families today, Brian. Meanwhile, students at Cornell University, Brian, we want to ask you about this. They were welcomed back with more anti-Israel protests. This was yesterday. Protesters also vandalized Cornell's main administrative building with messages like Israel bombs, Cornell pays, and blood is on your hands. The university's president did ultimately step down earlier this year, but she insisted she was not forced out over the campus tensions. One student says the school is still failing to handle the situation.
After the past year of unrest and lawlessness, this comes as no surprise at all to me. And the administration's weak response that we just saw them put out yesterday and their inaction on behalf of disciplining these protesters send a clear message that it's not themselves who have been dictating university policy, but it's the very students who the policies are meant to regulate.
Several colleges and universities have implemented new rules ahead of the school year to curb the hate we saw across the nation last spring. But many Jewish students are still worried and fear that new regulations will not be enough. A new survey finds that 44% of college students and recent graduates say they rarely or never feel safe identifying as Jewish on campus. 76% believe anti-Semitism has gotten worse, and 83% say Jewish hate is a very serious problem. So they can have rules, but will they enforce them and keep these students safe and away from fearing walking on their campus, Brian?
It's absolutely nuts. In our lifetime, Sandra, we're witnessing anti-Semitism that we used to watch on film in black and white from the 1940s. But the Jewish people and the Israelis say, okay, if we have to do it, we know how to fight our way out of it. And so do those Israeli kids. But we got to get a hold of this. And I'm brought to Daniel Pletka did a great story in the National Review. And the third line should be something we should all note. Iran is providing financial support to American protesters through these other so-called pro-Palestinian groups. We know that. The Justice Department, Josh Gottheimer, a Democrat, others should be leading the fight to bring both sides together to push back on outside forces that are influencing next generations of Americans. And I'll bring up something. There's faculty there. They're teaching pro-Palestinian, anti-Israeli courses. Why are they doing this? And these presidents become members of faculty in many cases, like one of these, I believe it was over in Harvard or Yale. They just lose their job. They keep their pay and they just go to another place until the heat goes off. There's got to be a massive look at all this. But why not a Justice Department investigation? Are you happy that TikTok has 85% anti-Israeli videos on there and algorithms? Is that something that should make please any American?
That's crazy. Brian, we appreciate you joining us. We'll let you get back to work. You haven't been on radio or TV enough today.
We're simulcasting right now.
I love it. Thanks for joining us, Brian.
Go get him, Sandra. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Vice President.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Things that I believed in for all these years, 50 years of coaching, no longer exist in college athletics. So it's always about developing players. It was always about helping people be more successful in life. My wife even said to me, you know, like right before I retired, and said, why are we doing this? And I said, what do you mean? She said, all they care about is how much you're going to pay them. They don't care about how you're going to develop them, which is all what we've always done. So why are we doing this? So, you know, to me, that was sort of a red alert that we really are creating a circumstance here that is not beneficial to the development of young people.
Right. But then people talk about the equity. If you have built multi-billion dollar business and the people that are most valuable, the players, are just getting an education, they're getting books and maybe a stipend, is that fair? Regardless of what you think, those days are done and things have changed. And I can't tell you how many smart sports people have come up to me. Not to do it necessarily for a living, but it's really good. Where's this heading? Where's it going? Why is it, what do you mean people are leaving for money? If you don't start a game or your team loses a bowl game, or you're now leaving unless you, that coach can give you more money. I'm not talking about the NFL pre-salary cap. I'm talking about college football. Armin Katayan joins us now, six-time New York Times bestseller. His latest book, The Price, What It Takes to Win in College Football, as the Era of Chaos, is a must-read for people that want to understand where we're heading and where we are. Armin, welcome back. Congratulations on doing this. I don't know anyone that's tackled it because it's changing so quickly.
Well, you're right, Brian. I was listening to you, and I'm going, well, that's a pretty good description of the chaotic world that that John Talty and I jumped into. It was almost like jumping on a speeding freight train that was changing tracks like every week, every day, every hour at times, and the train having no idea where it was going, and still, I think, does not have a final destination. So, yeah, we found that we found the landscape kind of wide open for us, and in terms of the kind of in-depth reporting we wanted to do. So we really feel like we've delivered something that I think any kind of college football fan is really going to enjoy, because it does give you a behind-the-scenes look at all the, you know, we talk about the price. It's not just the financial price, the money involved, but it's the physical price, the emotional price, the psychological price, the people that are making a livelihood in this game are really suffering from right now.
So I guess I could take a step back like you do. And Ed O'Bannon is playing a video game, and he's now out of the NBA, did not have a great NBA career, was a superstar like his brother Charles, I thought, anyway, college basketball career. But he's seeing himself in a UCLA jersey in EA Sports. He's not getting a dime for this. And that prompted him to join a lawsuit that did what?
Well, it changed the face of college sports. There's a chapter in the book called Oppenheimer that really begins with Sonny Vaccaro. And some of your audience will know Sonny from his really iconic influence, both in paying college coaches for the first time on behalf of Nike, but also creating an all-star game and the ABCD camp, which really was the showcase for premier high school athletes in the country. And you know, Sonny reached this inflection point about 40 years into his life and 30 years into being in the basketball business, where he just saw time and time again, O'Bannon being Exhibit A, Pearl Washington from Syracuse being Exhibit B, where they would be used in these games where their likeness, their name, image, and likeness would be clearly understood by anybody that knew the game. But the players were getting nothing. And Sonny was literally Oppenheimer. That's the name of the chapter. And he's the one that kind of created the atom bomb that blew up NIL and ended up in court with the O'Bannon case. And that led to the Alston case, which led to the House case, which led to the Supreme Court ruling in July of 2021 in a unanimous decision. How rare is that? That basically called the NCAA a cartel and said that they were suppressing wages in violation of the Sherman Antitrust Act. That was the beginning of NIL. And from there, we're in this brave new world right now where I don't think anybody really understands yet, you know, the full implications of A, that case and that landmark decision, but B, where this is going. Everybody is kind of doing this on the fly right now. The enforcement staff, a pretty thankless job on any sort of on a good day, and their hands are basically tied behind their backs right now because of lawsuits in various courts. So, you know, I don't think anybody really has an idea what the end game is here, and it probably won't until a couple of years from now.
Wow, and you gave us a lot, and I have my audience, 200 plus stations. We're not all sports stations, so you won really fast. People should know, if there was a problem in the NFL, they win or lose a lawsuit, it would start with the commissioner and the owners. But the NCAA does not have the overseeing power now of college sports. Is that correct?
Well, I think that's correct. I think the courts have it right now,
Who has it?
The courts have it. Really, I think what we're looking at. But if you go back, you know, I'm not too into this woe is me NCAA story. You know, there's that old proverb that says you reap what you sow. You know, in our book, we certainly detail the history of delay and denial in court by the NCAA in one lawsuit after another, where they either settled it because they wanted not to set any precedent,
Okay.
Or they just fought it and lost time and time again, leading up to that, you know, historic Supreme Court ruling. So this is, and I, there's actually a really good quote in the book from one of the high-ranking NCAA officials we talked to. He said, "We had ample opportunity," I'm paraphrasing here, "but ample opportunity to take the air out of this inflated tire. And time again, we didn't do it." And, you know, this is what you're facing right now. The power has shifted back to the student athlete, or actually the athlete student.
I don't even know. Can you imagine if someone got suspended for academic ineligibility? It's never going to happen. Didn't Deion Sanders' son say he only been to class twice? He's at the University of Colorado. Here's an example. Jimbo Fisher, another legendary coach, is in the book. This is what he said has changed about sports with the NIL. Cut 46.
Think of every pro player had an open free agent contract. Oh. He could leave every time. That's what college players are right
now.
That's
awful. As a coach, that's got to be exhausting.
It is. The visits in the spring now. It used to be a couple months. They weren't down months, but you had normal weekends. You're getting home at 5 and 6 in the evening. Those days are over. The time, it is almost doubled for a college coach right now. And it is very strenuous, very nerve-wracking. And because somebody is visiting your campus every day.
So, for example, if I'm playing and my team doesn't win a bowl game, they're maybe not going to be as good next year. I'm going to leave. That's what Nick Saban said. He said, after they lose that bowl game, people come up and go, "Yeah, I'm going to leave, coach, unless you can get me more money." More money? This is college. So, and then you used to be, remember the days, Armin, when you lived it, you worked it, where if you transferred, you had to sit out a year.
Yes.
So now they're going in real time.
Yeah, no, and those two windows, those so-called portals, where players can go into the portal and really become free agents, like Jimbo said, and some of the money that's being offered, you know, is pretty astronomical for an 18, 19, 20-year-old kid. You're talking for a really high-level quarterback, maybe in his graduate year, transferring out of, let's say, a Big Ten school.
Okay.
Or a Big 12 school to go into the SEC to a team that has everything on its roster except the kind of quarterback that could make a difference to win a national championship. I was talking to one NCAA investigator about this, and it takes quite a bit to get me, you know, to raise my eyebrows. He said that number could be, with the right booster network and the right collective, $8 million for one year.
This is like this is a 20-year-old, let's say. Or 21-year-old.
21-year-old, yeah. $8 million. But if you think about it, Brian, the risk-reward, the payoff on the back end now with the money that's being poured into the college football playoffs, it's worth it for a school to risk $8 million because between what you get from the college football playoff payoff and increased applications, increased money from donors and alumni, you could be talking 3 or 4 times that kind of money.
So a couple of things. This is just amazing to me. The word collectives. How would you describe what a collective is?
That's a good question. A collective is a group of people, kind of like the old booster days. You know, they had collectives, but they didn't call them that. They were the booster group that met at some guy's house and put some money together to try to get players under the table. The collectives now really are over the table groups that can bind together, pool their money, and then go out and help the university, the athletic department, the football team collect talent. And the problem is that the relationship between the collective and the athletic department is so opaque at the moment, the NCAA doesn't really know or can't determine whether that collective money by that group of boosters or a group of interested parties is used as an inducement to bring a player to a particular team. And that's where, you know, the rubber meets the road these days.
But to me, of course it would be. You know, of course it is.
Yeah, of course it is. But can you prove it? And the answer is time and time again.
But collectives are above board, right? I mean,
well, they are above board.
So they're not secret. They're not sinister. Yeah. So this is out in the open. So Nick Saban said this as he left the game. So people should know at home, he's probably the most effective coach, successful coach, certainly in the modern era at Alabama. Stepped aside. He doesn't like the new calculus. He's now in broadcasting at least for a year. Cut 45.
As I said before, name, image, and likeness is a great opportunity for them to create a brand for themselves. I'm not against that at all. But to come up with some kind of a system that still can help the development of young people, I think, is paramount to the future of college athletics.
And just so you know, he's saying, I'm stepping aside, they came up to him after the championship game, he says, we say lost, and everybody wanted more money. He said, "Now that's it. I quit. I'm out of this. I can't get you more money."
Oh, I know.
How do you bench a player? If I bench a player to teach him a lesson, he's going to transfer.
No question. I'm pretty close to Nick. I've known him since his days when he was coaching the Miami Dolphins, and I'm close with Terry. And I know you had a quote about how Terry felt, and I was communicating and texting with Terry, and that statement is right on. The new rules, she said, were just absolute murder for them. And if Nick wants one thing in his program, he wants control. And the loss of that control, I mean, there's a great story in our book about Julian Sand, who was the top-rated quarterback in the country that Nick invested so much time believing that Julian, who's out of California, Carlsbad High School, a terrific kid. There's a big chapter called The Quarterback about him that I reported for the book. And he was going to be the next great quarterback at Alabama, no question. Another number one draft choice if he didn't get hurt. And literally, Julian is in his first day of classes at Alabama. He's got a 3 o'clock class. At 4 o'clock, he walks into his first team meeting of the new school year. And within 5 minutes, Nick has retired. Can you imagine that? You've basically been – you've committed your life to the Alabama program and to Coach Saban – and within 5 minutes, he's decided to leave because of the state of college football. Now he's a perfect example. He's at Ohio State. He went into the portal because of a situation that he found himself in with Kalen DeBoer, the new coach at Alabama. And I'll say this, in a meeting with Coach DeBoer, and this is hard to believe because this is the number one quarterback in the country, certainly the number one recruit of the class of 24 of quarterbacks, and understanding that DeBoer was dealing with a lot of stuff at the time, but in a meeting with Julian, one of the things he said to him was, "How do you spell your last name again?" Now, that to me is like, I'm sorry, if you're trying to figure out what the state of college football is at this moment, that's a pretty good example. And then Julian, within a few days, decides, you know what, this isn't where I want to be. And it took Ryan Day in Ohio State about a day to convince Julian to come to Ohio State, and he'll, unless I miss my guess, he'll be starting for them next year as a sophomore.
And just so you know, like, famous names also get it. You have Arch Manning, who has not played a handful of downs so far, will not start again this year. He's got NIL deals. He has had many more than he's even taken. Deion Sanders, both his sons, famous name, famous family. They got huge NIL deals. Deion Sanders also in the middle of controversy. He's actually kicked out. You must hate this. Quit said, and so do I, a Denver Post columnist, Sean Keeler, because of the coverage of him. Listen to Deion explain this. Cut 49.
Coach Sean Keeler, the Denver Post. Happy summer, my man.
You don't like us, man. Why do you do this to yourself? You don't like us.
Mark likes me, by the way.
Why do you do this? Like, you know you don't. Like, why do you do
this? No, it's not about that. Football question. Football question.
Why do you do this? Like, it would be hard for me to really engage in someone I don't like or something I don't like. I'm just asking why. Like, why?
I've got to pay
what
the bills,
did I do?
You didn't do anything. It's not about that. But this is a football question.
I'm asking you why.
Yeah, you can ask.
Answer me. Because you want me to answer you.
Okay, that's fine. That's fair.
Why?
Because I have questions.
Give me your why.
What's your why? What do you want to know?
Why are you always on attack? What did we do?
Where am I on attack today? Where am I on attack?
Yeah, I'm not gonna give you opportunities to be on attack.
He basically kicked him out of following him. Your thoughts on that?
It's despicable behavior by Deion. I mean, I honest to God, if I was part of that press corps out there covering that football team, which thank God I'm not, because I'm not a huge fan of Deion Sanders in any way, shape, or form. I would have just, everyone should have walked out of that room and not come back and not done a single story about the Buffaloes and see how far that goes. I don't know that columnist. I've read his work. He can be tough, but that's what columnists are there for, to call people to account. And to pull that kind of stunt in a press conference is just, it's just, I don't know. It's just beyond belief in a lot of ways.
Armin, I think I need 2 hours with you. Big fan. I'd love to have you back. Congratulations on the book. It's called The Price.
Thanks, Brian.
Any college football fan or somebody that just wants to know where it's heading, this is the one to get. It's what it takes to win in college football's year of chaos. A lot of coaches should read this too. Armand Katayan, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
I'll tell you what, I was surprised when I found out I was the first one to do it a little bit. So it's cool. It's, you know, it's, you know, leaving a stamp like that on the game. It's interesting and it's strange. And I'm, you know, grateful for the opportunity to have that. And so, yeah, at the end of the day, it, you know, it's a cool thing.
So as I mentioned, Danny Jensen yesterday, he was on NESN. He made baseball history. He played a game. It got rained out. He's with the Toronto Blue Jays. Got traded over to the Red Sox. They go to make up the game. He's on the Red Sox now. So what does he do? He's got to put on his Blue Jays uniform and then play for the Blue Jays. I think he was on second base. And then come back and play for the Red Sox in the second game. The game ended with a 4-1 win for the Blue Jays. Jansen finished 1-for-4 for Boston. No official bat for Toronto. That's pretty cool.
You know, the interesting thing is, here's a quirk. If he had an 0-2 count when the game was suspended while he was with the Blue Jays, and his replacement, his pinch hitter, struck out, the strikeout would go against him, and he would have been the catcher of record catching his own strikeout.
Next, Bill Belichick takes over. Jim Gray's got to love this. For Tom Brady on Let's Go. Since Tom Brady's now with Fox, he can't do the SiriusXM show. So now Jim Gray will go do it with Bill Belichick. How cool is that? For 20 years, Brady said, I threw the ball for Coach Belichick. Now I'm passing the microphone to him on Let's Go. That's pretty cool, isn't it?
It seems like they are back in good graces with each other.
I know. You know what? It's just like you go to battle, and then you realize I respect both. We needed both to be successful. Plus, Brady got the last laugh. You win a Super Bowl with somebody else.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.